Next up, we have Janusz Jago.
Yes.
He's the creator of Blastronaut. As also some of you struggle with using nice lighting for 2D games, as you might use them for 3D games, I think Janusz has a cool tool set that will help us make 2D games more dynamic, especially for lighting. And I'm looking forward. I hope you too. Yeah, have fun. And thank you, Janusz.
All right. Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. Thank you. So I'm pleased to be here. And thank you for inviting me again. So last time, I was here 2 years ago, where there was Kotokon. And then I was making a little presentation about a demo scene that I made. Maybe you have seen this abandoned spaceship demo scene. The recording is also live. You can recheck the video about how I made it. But since then, I haven't actually worked on 3D much. I still have a game to finish, the Blastronaut game. And therefore, I've added some cool effects to that and made this new talk about 2D effects. So the name of the talk is Ray Tracing is simple for 2D games. And my goal is to make it really simple for you. And let's see how it turns out. But as I said, there is all the fuss about 3D in Godot. All the new lighting effects are mostly coming for 3D. So I think we should really give the 2D games also some love and try out some ray tracing on 2D. So first of all, actually, these lighting systems are not even too new. Already in Godot 3, there is this cool dynamic lighting system where you can have dynamic lights and nice soft shadows. These are like multiple, like four layers of shadows, but it runs really fast, 2.5 millisecond fast. And this is on my laptop that's on power saver mode and has integrated Intel graphics. So if some of those frame times are not too high, it's not necessarily the issue of Godot or its performance, but it might be my mistake or moreover my pretty regular hardware. So, but this runs fine, and it's pretty easy to set up. So you just add a bunch of images or shapes to the scene. And to those images and shapes, you add light occluder nodes underneath. These light occluder nodes also need to get the shape, and this process is a little bit tedious. You need to copy it from the original shape and paste it, but it can be added. It can also be added for tile maps, simple, great, and then bunch of light sources. Everything just works out of the box. Nothing else needed. Now, since Godot 4 came out already quite a while ago, I found a post from 2020 from Redus. That Godot 2D engine gets several improvements from upcoming 4.0. And the main headline improvement was the 2D signed distance field. And this article also noted that they encourage the community to take a good use of it and see what they can do. So I'll trying to, in this talk, I'm trying to like fulfill this promise and see what we can do with this signed distance field. So what is a signed distance field? It's pretty much a representation of a distance from any shape. And this signed distance field is created in Godot 4 for those occluder polygons. And this is automatically done. You just need to use it, so it takes effect. So on the signed distance field, this is the same scene. This is the same shapes. And on the edge of the shape, it has distance field distance values of zero. There are also negative values inside the shape, and the positive values, the distance values, are outside the shape. And these values are really like the distance in pretty much in pixel scale, and this means that that it's goes to infinite, pretty much whatever the size it is. But just to draw it on the screen, we need to like clamp it to the certain range. So this is how you do it in shader. That's a shader. I've added a new canvas layer and a color rect under it, full screen color rect with the shader. And all the upcoming examples are the same way, just a full screen color rect with a specific shader. And this time, what it does, it has this parameter. Then it converts to the screen UV coordinate to the distance field coordinate. This is necessary because the distance field does not actually need to match the screen one-to-one. In Godot, it's actually even, by default, it's rendered a bit larger, so you can also sample the distance outside the screen and can have nice effects that scale nicely. And then here it's this value is sampled from this new coordinate, and I will divide it by the cutoff so that it's transformed between scale 0 to 1. So everything above the cutoff is just clamped white. All right, easy enough. There is actually another pretty cool function built into it as well. It's the signed distance field normal. So as you can see, you can also sample the signed distance field from the normal location. And if I play into the normal, it pretty much directs you towards the closest edge as well. So it might be pretty useful to optimize this algorithms later, so that we also don't know only how far the edge is, but we can also know pretty much exactly where the closest edge is by multiplying the normal with the distance value. Maybe I will use it later, and maybe not. We will see. So what can we do with it? So some very simple things that we can apply. We can create ambient occlusion effects. So what it is, I'm just sampling the signed distance field here, and then smooth stepping it to a certain desired range. So I'm just taking a part of it that's outside it. Smooth step is a really useful function in shaders. It's almost like mix function, but it's smooth. It eases in and out. And here, what's going on? I'm taking it two times. First of all, it's between the width and zero. That's the outer edge, and then also I'm subtracting the inside values, so it doesn't draw the outline on top of the graphics like so, and blending it as well. And otherwise, I'm just adding it on top of what's ever rendered. And some of you might ask, well, it's not ambient occlusion; it's like drop shadows, or if I color it really bright, it's like outer glow. but yeah, in reality, in 2D, these are the same thing. if you just zoom it out, it has a nice shadows, nice occlusion to the edges of the geometry. So that's why I'm calling it like that. You can expand on it, draw outlines. Like outlines, quite simple to draw. You just sample the points around. However, if you want to draw really large outlines, it can get a bit tricky, and you need to do a lot of sampling. So that doesn't work out so well with just sampling the local neighborhood in shader. However, since we have distance fields, we can just sample it and smooth step it so that we have this kind of outline shape. And we can get two cool effects with it. Maybe really, really give it color. We can draw the outlines on top of the top of the mesh. Increase its frequencies. Playing around with shaders is pretty cool. I recommend everyone to play with their shaders, and see what happy accidents can happen. About the performance as well, a little bit. You see that the performance has cranked up to almost 6 milliseconds. This is because the sampling the signed distance field itself is fast, but as you sample the first time, it actually also need to generate the distance field, and this might take a little bit of like computing power. It has this cool jump floating algorithm to generate it, but it needs to pretty much draw the screen couple of times. It's fast, but it takes a little bit of performance. So now let's get to this original example provided by this Godot blog post, and this is exact code that was given there to generate these nice angled shadows on behind your meshes. I've just copied and pasted it here. So, what's going on here is we need to find the closest edge, and we need to find it to a certain direction. And since we have a certain direction, not just the closest edge, we need to find. We need something more complex. And the system that's used is called circle or sphere tracing, regarding whether you do it in 3D or 2D space, pretty much you can find any edge in any kind of image. You even don't need a distance field. If you just do ray marching, pixel by pixel, march throughout the scene until you find the edge. But obviously, it won't scale very well, and will not give you the best performance. But having the distance field available allows us to do it much more efficiently. So use this circle tracing, which means that at any point on this Raymart step, pretty much, we can. Always freely move to the distance of the closest geometry. So since we can sample what's the distance in this point, we know that at least that by the distance we can sample, because and we won't hit anything else. And then it continued until eventually it reaches the final geometry edge. It's much less samples, but still a few. And this is how it's done. As you can see, in principle, it's pretty simple. We just sample the distance field. So let's take a look at this code. First, it just defines the direction vector, So from the angle, it multiplies by pi. Nowadays, we know that there is also a built-in constant for pi, so I can replace that. This pretty much moves it to the radians, where the sine and cosine functions are operating. And we have a direction vector, a unit vector with direction input. We also can sample the starting, find where our starting like distance field like position is, and then start accumulating the distance as we step. So in a while loop, it steps. In every step, it samples the distance field and adds this distance to the accumulation. Until the distance that it finds is smaller than the threshold, it has hit inside the mesh where it breaks, and returns the accumulated distance as the one that's gathered. And here we can also see what the ray marching really means, or what using the ray is just this unit vector. And we multiply it by distance and always add it on top of the previous coordinate. And this last part is just to not draw the distance field inside the inside the geometry. So pretty much the same thing that we did earlier with our example. When you're working with shaders, you're thinking the opposite direction, not how the objects occludes the distance, but instead we just take a pixel and see what occludes this pixel. So in this directional shadows, we just have one direction where it samples and finds this distance field. But if you want to create something like ambient occlusion or ambient light, we pretty much want to sample all around the pixel. So take and sample in all directions. And then we need a method to do it. So here's the base of my own function. It's in some step a little bit simpler, so that it also here creates the ray as it did before, and then I don't specify the maximum distance, but instead the maximum number of steps that are allowed to do. In certain way, it's less optimal, but at least it won't allow us to mask some performance issues. So it's basically the exact same thing. I am sampling the distance field inside the step and checking if it has hit something. If the hit occurs, I'll just set the radiance color to 1 and return. And if not, then I will increase the position by the step, and moving on to the next trace. That's pretty simple. And by changing the max step, we can also see that there is like a certain threshold where there are too few steps, so the sphere tracing won't reach the actual geometry when it's too far away. But it's pretty much gives you as a good view of how many calculations are done. In this case, for every pixel, 46 steps. Good. So let's expand on it. And I really hope you didn't mind my little silly indentation here. It really holds my slides together. Since the next slide, we can see what has actually changed. And the next step to improve it on it is just to add more arrays. So I define like a number of arrays we want to trace. And to do that, so we have the array count, I also calculate what's the angle between the different rays of the by having this tau over array count. Tau just means 2 times pi, so it's like a full circle. And I've added this outer loop that loops over the array count in this case. It also breaks early if the distance field is inside the mesh, so to just to see it a bit better. And then I calculate this exact angle by multiplying the step value by the tau over array count. And yeah, the internals remain the same. Just in the end, I'll sum up all the radians and divide it by the array count, so I can clearly see how many rays it has. And as we can see, now it can get pretty slow. For like 100 rays, it already takes 70 milliseconds and is in still in double digits, but reaching single digits speed. And increasing the max step won't help it either. So we need to find some performance optimizations. But first, let's optimize the look, because our light sources or our surfaces are not all white. Instead, what we can do, we can sample. We can instead of just adding white color, we can transform back to the regular UV space from the, after the ray mart has finished, and get where the ray ends. And then. Sample the screen texture. Yeah, we have this screen texture here as well, and get what was actually drawn, the color on the background. And yeah, that works well. Now it's start shine already pretty nicely, but I've also summed up the number of steps I'm actually making in each position. And if I crank that up, you can see that it's pretty white, which means it does the maximum number of steps. So in this case, when the color is white, it does 42 times 32 samples for every pixel. So quite a lot. And by cranking it up, I can tank the FPS again. It's always fun. Yeah, but I think the more critical issue to worry about is that at the moment, the edge that we are detecting is kind of, it's not exact color. It's a little bit like noisy. And that's because while the ray marching ends us usually on the edge of this surface, the edge is oftentimes anti-aliased, and the background also bleeds in. So a simple fix to it is just once we have reached the edge, we add a little extra buffer, like 2 pixel lengths, so that we are actually sampling inside the light source and not from the middle of somewhere. That's one thing. Another thing is that it's hard to see, but if I set the ray count to 3, it's actually visible, not really well, is that those lines are actually a little bit wobbly. And that's because I'm still previously just accumulating the starting position, and it has those floating points errors when I just always adding a certain distance to the starting point. So instead, we can do it a little bit differently, a little bit better. We can just keep the starting location at the same and accumulate the floating distance. So this will get rid of those floating point accumulative like errors. All right. So now looking pretty good. Let's get to the next step and see where's the main performance issue, because it's still pretty white and does a lot of samples. And in this naive approach, what actually happens is that for every ray that's going outside the screen, it just goes infinitely as far as there are steps to do. So, and usually pretty far. So what we can do, we can transform the screen UV a little bit earlier and check, is the ray actually inside the screen? If it leaves it, then we just stop the ray march. And yeah, that's already, as you can see, by doing this simple optimization. Let's crank the numbers high, 100 ray counts. Steps also like hundreds. It's 6 FPS. Not too nice for my PC. Okay, I made it too low, so let me restart the demo. One moment, please. I just deleted the inside, I guess. So where were we? Yeah, here. So once again, let's make it like 100 milliseconds, 8 frames per second. That's fine. Okay, not too fine. So 13. So yeah, putting back in, we are right on the 40 frames per second mark. So biggest optimization done. Not really an optimization, more like my own bug that it originally had. So, all right, that can be doable. It already looks nice and smooth, and 30 frames per second might be okay frame rate for certain devices, but I guess gamers probably like to have a little bit more. So what else can we do instead of just cranking up the rays to capture every point? And the simplest optimization is to use noise. So we can randomize where exactly we are sampling. I hope the noise is also visible from the on the large screen. And here I have just four rays. Everything is exactly as it was in with just four rays. But for those rays, I'm adding a little bit of noise to the starting location of the rotation. Or the rotation, so that now it's nice and kind of blends in into the noise. And yeah, it runs nice, 60 frames per second, no issues there. But the noise is still, for me, it's pretty distracting, so let's also see the noise. This is what the noise looks. And I've just found some blog post some hash functions for noise. If you check from the shader toy algorithms, they oftentimes have something similar, where you have some you multiply the coordinates by really large numbers and then take the sign of it and then fracture. So yeah, it looks like a noise, but it's really not a uniform. Or really not a really good hash function, so you can clearly see that it has some noise in it. So, but that's solvable. We simply need to change the coordinate a bit, maybe scale the UV scale up out, like 101 maybe. And now it starts looking like a nice noise. I can't determine any patterns anymore. I also had to scale the time. Otherwise, if you just scroll, like take the hash of this time. Otherwise, I just you can see the noise scrolling. But if I hash the time as well, then now it looks like a white noise, and that's good. Yeah, it works, but it's a bit noisy. Let's decrease the ray counts as well. So what else can we do to really easily improve that? And maybe we can use a different noise. And to know what other noise is often used to solve such noisy issues. Well, Berlin noise as usually very large, like shape, and it might look cool, but I guess it also has a very distinct pattern that's usually displayed in much larger scale. So probably not Berlin noise. Any other guesses? Blue noise, exactly. So that's regular noise. The main issue is it has it's completely random. It has some larger like darker and lighter spots. So instead, we need a blue noise. So where can we find the blue noise? Blue noise is not a noise that you want to like calculate in real time. It's really slow to do. So typically, we need to find some kind of a texture to sample it from, so it's pre-calculated. And when I search from the Google blue noise texture, the very first link is from Galino, from Hugo. Oh, cool. Let's see what's in this Hugo's library. And it's different blue noises in different resolutions. So yeah, just pick one and add to you shader, thanks to Hugo. So it seems that the open source world is pretty small. So let's see. Here, I still have four rays. Just replace the noise sampling with like hash function with sampling the noise texture. Everything else is still pretty the same. Sampling the noise texture and adding some time to the UV value on top. And now you probably can't see the noise very well. If I watch it really closely, it's visible, and definitely if I make a still image of it, the blue noise can be visible, but it's pretty much solved the issue for us. If I move it right to the left, you can probably see some noise now, but maybe not. So yeah, nice. It looks nice and almost noise free because we are using such a good noise. And yeah, that's what the noise looks in this case, almost invisible. So what's next? Maybe the performance is still not the best. How can we improve that? When I look back on the... Oops. When I look back on the original profile view, then the main issue is where the... The most performance is lost near other surfaces. So we don't need to do so many samples when the point is far away from the mesh, but when the sample is near a surface, and that looks a little bit silly. It should be like the sample. We are sampling the point right near the mesh. Why does it need to do the most samples there? Can someone guess why we need to do most samples near the our geometry.
Because the circles are smaller, so you have less distance that you cover.
Yeah, it's less distance, but the array might should also find it sooner. So the actual reason is that that we are doing the rays in all directions. We are also doing the rays on the sideways and on top and bottom. And when the ray is very close to the surface but not touching, then we need to do a lot of samples for this ray, because we can only sample in very short steps. So let me see what we can do for it. It's a little bit of a hack solution, but we can have a specified max step. So when I'm very close to the surface, I can make bigger steps. Let's see the bug view. Okay, yeah, here it maybe shows it better. And pretty much I can see that if I haven't got much closer to the surface with my last step, then instead I can do a little bit bigger step. And as you can see, by increasing the step size, it kind of dims down the complexity, and it gets much faster. But it also has a downside. So if the step is too large, it can start showing some artifacts. So yeah, it can, if those optimization steps are too long, then we might miss the surface altogether. That's where probably using the normal information might become handy to improve it further. But to be honest with you, I didn't have time to try it out yet. So I will leave it up to you as your own exercise to see if maybe the steps can optimize even further. Now, it's pretty fast. Runs on my low end laptop with like 9 milliseconds. It's surprisingly slow, even. But it's doable, and we can add it to add it to the background and get the regular image together with the nice global lights. But now what you might ask me or what you were thinking about 2D is that, but that's not radiance cascades. So you have all heard this cool new features of radiance cascades. Path of Exile uses it, for example, or originally I think they developed this system. So why aren't we using that? And the easy, simple solution is that will go outside the boundary of simple. So it's a little bit more technical to implement, but I can give you a quick overview what it does. It uses this little behavior that when we're sampling the occluders that are close to the object, then we can do much fewer radial samples, and when we are sampling things that are farther away, then we need to make more samples, but we can do it in much lower resolution. So the linear distance of this shadowed penumbra area is pretty blurry in there. And what it does, it very creatively divides these longer ray traces and shorter ray traces into into it has a very very small resolution, but many like long traces on very narrow area, and then gradually shorter traces to the like closer areas, and blends them together in the process. Overall, like complexity of it is similar to doing like 16 ray samples. So same as if I would crank up this parameter here to 16. It's still for making the ray traces relies on the distance field. It's just additional optimization on top of it. But with this optimization, it also has some certain artifacts and issues that needs to be solved. It can have some distinct like halo around the edges, and there are solutions to fix it, but these are outside the scope of this little talk. However, Godot is not alone. There is actually someone has already implemented it. There is this Radiance Cascade for Godot, and you can try it out and get even faster running global lighting this way. Alrighty, so now finally, where my game comes into this system, because this example right now I was just playing around with this new Godot 4 distance build. However, I have a little secret. The Plastronaut is still made in Godot 3, and I don't have any distance field there. And another secret is it still uses the TLES 2. All the effects. I would like to keep that this way, and all the effects are relying on very simple. Calculations. So, what I did, I begin by also I've drawn this ship space, and basically this ray tracing works on pixel level, where I have like two masks. One mask is like from all the like occluders, all the edges, and dynamically, I also add the light sources on top of this mask, and then there is another mask about the background. And for the edge mask, I want to create this distance field so that I can have this optimized cone tracing. Now, the problem with it is that when I tried the jump flooding algorithm, it didn't really work really well on TLS2, and the problem is that I can't use very high density textures, how it's called. So I can't use like floating point textures, and having this 8-bit per channel textures don't have the resolution needed to run this algorithm nicely. So instead, what I did, I just created my very simple own distance field that just expands like 5 pixels outside the area, I was able to do it in a single pass. It's just a few samples, and moreover, I'm storing the distance field in the alpha channel of this texture, and the color value in the color channels. And what it allows me optimize a bit is that I don't need to sample the color texture separately. I can simply sample the distance field texture, and when it's close enough, it gives me the color in the same sample. And yeah, for this pixel scale screen, it was really easy to just draw 100 and even having those smaller steps like five pixels long was enough to have relatively fast speed. And then finally, I have another confession. I'm not. Although it works pretty nicely in real time, it's a huge waste of laptop battery power or graphics card might make too much noise if it gradually needs to render this art every frame. So I pretty much bake the entire lighting at once, and when the lights are changes, I just blend between two different frames. And by doing it, it also allows me to sample it in really, really large scale. So seeing how it looks in Plasternaut, let's open it up. I really should turn the power saver mode off. do you have any questions? Maybe you can take the questions. We might have time for one or two. And here, I'm turning on different lights, and then it looks pretty nice.
Yeah, it was a great talk. Thank you for that. I got a question. So in the traditional Godot 2D lighting system, you have, for example, unshaded materials. You can just set canvas material to unshaded, and that works well. How would you do this in a SDF-based lighting system to have like individual sprites being shaded versus unshaded
for SDF lighting? So currently, the only solution that I know of, maybe I haven't seen the recent developments, but is to use those light occluder polygons. So you need to have some polygon shapes to generate the sign distance field. But there is actually even a macro for that. So if you select your sprite, there is this menu where you can generate the occluder polygon for this sprite. It might not do it very precisely. It might be quite low poly shape, and you need to hand tone it and correct it, but you can automatically generate those shapes for the regular sprites, yeah.
All right, are there some more questions? We still have 10 minutes till lunch.
Wonderful talk. This talk kind of blew my mind, and I realize I'm completely unprepared for what was going on, but a couple of quick questions. One was, how did you get the shader code to show up in the editor? It looked like your presentation was in Godot, which is fantastic. And then secondly, like, what would be a good way to get started with this in the most basic level? This is really some pretty advanced and awesome stuff. Thanks.
So how did you get the shader in this slide, pretty much? So I coded a little plugin, and let me see if I have time to show that. That's this one, and I made this my own little class. Let's sample ray tracing. I have my own, like, it uses the Godot built-in like nodes. Godot has like this text editor is already provided by Godot. So I simply it's in the UI, right? So I made my own little script that just takes the shader code, inserts it to the text edit field, whatever it was called, and then when I change the text, it applies the changes back to the shader, and all the coloring and cool features. These are all built into this text box, pretty much. So it's really awesome what Godot UI provides.
All right. Thank you, Janos, for this awesome presentation. I also have to say it's awesome to have it in Godot. We're going to have lunch break now, and afterwards we're going to hear from Chris about how they added multiplayer to Domekeeper. Hope to see you all back in this room. And another applause to Janos.
Thank you very much.